What's going on, squad? Welcome back to another episode of Ball Out Dodgeball. Today we are very lucky to be sitting with Mr. Patrick Nally, the new advisor to the WDBF board. Mr. Nally, how are you doing this morning?
I'm well. Yes, extremely well. Looking forward to this interview.
I know that, like we were talking before we started here, that this has been the most engagement we've seen for one of our podcasts. So not only are we very excited, but the dodgeball community is very excited to have you around with us.
Well, we're pleased to be here, and anything I can do to help, certainly that's why I'm here.
I'm glad to hear that. Mr. Nally, can you kind of get into a little bit of your background? I know from a Wikipedia search what they gave me, but I'd like to hear it from you.
Well, I've spent a long period of my life being involved in international sport. As a young man, I started as a messenger boy in an advertising agency and was taught the trade of marketing and communication and invited to go into a new public relations company. The partner at that time was a well-known sports broadcaster, and I came up with this idea of using sport as a means of communication, which back then hadn't happened. I had no idea other than I was showing off to exactly what I was saying or what it was we were going to do. But strangely enough, we did. We started using sport as a means of communication. I started teaching all the kids in England how to play tennis and pick up a tennis racket courtesy of a sponsor. And quite quickly, we saw that we'd stumbled across a very interesting opportunity to use sport as a means of communication. Now, that was way back in the very early 70s. And then from that, I was introduced into the international federation world. I got to know FIFA. I brought Coca-Cola together and created a development program for FIFA to take all the strong aspects of their sport into Africa and Asia, as it didn't exist. So it was a big success, as we've seen. That led me on to getting involved with the World Cup in 1978 in Argentina and understanding that FIFA didn't control any of its rights. So I had to sort of repackage and negotiate with the military junta to get all the things back that we needed to market the World Cup in Argentina very well. So that led on to the whole commercial approach for FIFA. I was doing the same at that time with the Olympics, working with the various Olympic federations and working up to Moscow in 1980. I then started with athletics. I then started with swimming. I then started with gymnastics. So in essence, starting with this comment as a young man to impress somebody, showed that, yes, sport was an extraordinary, powerful means of communication, and if presented and packaged in the right way, could be extremely successful, not only for the sport, but also for those corporates and for those companies. So, yeah, I've had a long, deep experience in working with international federations.
Wow, that's quite the list of sports you've been involved with.
That's just a few.
Yeah. So what piqued your interest about dodgeball after all of those sports that have been a little bit more established, and now dodgeball being kind of at the seed? What drew your interest to dodgeball?
It was fascinating. A couple of years ago, I was at a GAIF meeting in Australia, and there was a young lady there manning the stand promoting dodgeball. And obviously, I was very interested because wearing my president of the International Federation of Match Poker, I know how much a challenge it is to get recognition, to get support. And I was fascinated in chatting and hearing a similar sort of story that here's dodgeball, which is relatively young, surprisingly for me, because obviously I thought dodgeball had been around perhaps a lot longer than clearly that it has. But the whole basis of a simple sport with the basics of throwing, catching, and dodging a ball. And it was interesting to me to hear there was obviously similar difficulties in getting people to recognize, to take the sport as seriously as perhaps they could or they should. So I thought, well, yeah, if there's anything that I could do to help, you know, I've been involved in GAIF ever since I helped set it up as a permanent thing in Monte Carlo back in 76. So it's not as if I don't know the structures, the systems, the IOC, the director of sport and what have you. So it just seemed to me that, you know, I was fascinated with hearing the story, that if I could help that story, then clearly, yeah, I'd be fascinated to do so because I like a challenge.
That's great. Because like I know like you really just touched on like one of the main things that like a lot of dodgeballers have been like kind of arguing back and forth that like we aren't regarded as like an official sport. And like as much as like we hate, like we love the sport, we want to say like, yeah, we're definitely a real sport. But when you talk to like the general public, it's usually like the first thing like all dodgeballers talk about, like when we bring up that we play competitive dodgeball, the first thing that comes up is, oh, just like the movie, or oh, that's a thing, or like it's usually kind of like taken as like a side comment because like you said, like it's not really regarded as like a full-on sport. And as much as we'd love to see that happen, like it's still gonna take a lot of steps to get to that place where like instead of getting the first thing people say like, oh, the movie is like, oh, that's so cool, like how did we join, how do we get involved, or like, oh, I didn't, or even if like you didn't know it was a sport, but like taking it in like more of like a positive way versus like almost like a joke, that'd be the great step. So glad you took it as a challenge and want to move forward with that.
Well, I sense that, which is what made it interesting for me, is that like I have a big problem. If you mention the word poker, there's a knee-jerk reaction because everybody thinks it's gaming and gambling. And it's not gaming and gambling. It's okay. People might want to gamble on poker in one aspect, but it's a skill. It's like chess. It's like bridge. It's a mind sport. So I'm well aware that there's this perception, and you're talking about, and I sensed it within dodgeball, there's a perception that it's a bit frivolous. It's not serious. But you know, it is, and it is a great sport. It's fantastic, you know, for everybody and for schools and universities and things. So, yeah, it was that sort of similarity of, you know, here's a bit of a challenge. But then I also sense that, you know, dodgeball isn't experienced in the international corridors of sport. You know, they haven't spent any time to get to understand the bureaucracy and things and the structure of the Olympics, how international sports federations work, the sort of politics and things that go on. So, you know, if I'm on this journey with my own federation, then here's another federation that perhaps I can help collaborate with and work with, because, you know, I have all this past knowledge. If I could pass it on, then clearly, you know, I enjoy teaching people about sports marketing. So if I can help with my knowledge to pass some of these things on, and also to brands, to corporates that could perhaps see a relationship with your sport could be very beneficial to them, because clearly I have a lot of experience in bridging those relationships, and also development programs and training programs, and yeah, and in terms of taking a lot of that experience and handing it over as best I can to see if it could be helpful to you.
Yeah, and that's actually something that we've touched on many times in our past episodes, is how does dodgeball take that next step? What do we have to do to get the sport to the next level? And when we really boil it down, it's we need to get our marketing together and on the same page and get out a consistent message of dodgeball. And we kind of want to overpower those schoolyard days where it's, you know, you pick the biggest kid and, you know, the smallest kids usually get picked last. Everybody has their skill set. And being able to get that message out to people and get people more interested in coming out and playing the sport and watching the sport is our biggest obstacle I think we have right now.
Well, and I would tend to agree that that's the challenge that needs to be looked at. But in a very simple way, and people may not realize this, that when I started with FIFA, FIFA was a relatively small governing body. It was strong in Europe and it was strong in the Americas, but that was it. United States didn't support soccer, as it was called, or nor did Japan, nor did really Australia. And there was nothing in Asia. There was nothing in Africa. You know, we took a development program funded by the Coca-Cola company to actually create this giant organization now that exists around the world. Look at how strong it is in Africa and how strong it is in Asia. But FIFA could never have done that on their own. It would never have worked. Coca-Cola had local bottlers. They wanted to work with local governments to show that they were local and not just part of the US military and things. So bringing together a brand and a company that has some objectives to help, it's an example to how a corporate really helped build the sport, for the sport to become what it is now on the global stage. Now, I'm not saying I can create a Coca-Cola development program in the same way as dodgeball, but I can certainly start introducing ways to how this thing can help. I've done a lot of work with UNESCO over the years, and UNESCO in terms of education and within sport, you know, working with the International School Sports Federation, perhaps with FISU, with the universities. There's got to be other ways and other elements that can help move that sport forward. And it's not just doing it on your own. Yeah, you've got to have the passion. You've got to have all people pulling in the same direction, which in itself is a big challenge. Mm-hmm. But there are plenty of opportunities to help piggyback, if that's the right word, to help get across, because you do have such strong merits. And certainly in terms of youth and development and fitness, when we all live in a crazy world with mental health issues and obesity issues, so, as a sport, I think there's such tremendous opportunities. It's now a matter of coming up with some strategic ways of bringing these things together and taking the sport forward.
So what you're saying is, like, it's not an instantaneous, like, solution. Like, it takes time. It's, like, over a process of years. So, like quick question, I guess, like, on a side note, like, how long between, like, let's say you started the deal with FIFA, like, the Coca-Cola, and, like, where FIFA got to where it's now, like, how long of a process was that,
It took, obviously, everybody thinks that they were multimillionaires within seconds. They weren't. We started with the development program. We also started a world youth tournament that didn't exist to give more nations the chance of international competition. That was an event started in 77 in Tunis and then went into Japan in 1979. But I would think it would probably have taken anything like 8 to 10 years in terms of it really becoming the monster sport that it was, because there wasn't the infrastructure in Asia, there wasn't the infrastructure in Africa. So these things had to sort of be built, and then, you know, it became what it's become, which is absolutely a massive monster of an organization. But it took time. On my own experience with Match Poker, you know, it's 10 years, and now we're observers. We will soon become full members. It isn't instantaneous. These things take time. You're a long way there already. You know, you have a strong support, you have structures, I think it's more looking at where people can help you just take it a little further, because it's already happening. But as you've said before, you're not yet recognized to the sport that you should be.
Yeah, and I think some of that problem is because we have so many different play styles. You know, unlike soccer or football, it's one way to play, and it doesn't vary too much from backyard to the professional level. Whereas with dodgeball, there's 5 different ball types, people play in different size courts. Do you think that helps us or hurts us?
I don't think it hurts you, because again, different balls, different court sizes and things can be probably helpful in some ways, depending on where you are, because of the facilities to, you know, you can't build purpose-built facilities. You've got to use facilities that exist. And it may be that in playgrounds, it could be one thing, in a hall, it could be something else. When it comes to the big international competition, clearly then it will be much more sensible to have a complete set of rules mm-hmm. that's consistent, and everybody knows when you get to that point, it is under this framework, it's under these conditions. When I started with FIFA, I don't think all the rules and regulations were quite as disciplined as perhaps that they've become, because it's obviously became more and more apparent as you become more and more international, you need more of a consistent status mm-hmm. and a consistent standard. But I think as long as people understand what rules, regulations they're going to be playing at the certain level of tournaments and competition, I think the variation, because the last thing you want is to restrict the sport to where it could be played.
Right.
So therefore, it needs to be adaptable to fit the spaces, because you haven't got the financial wherewithal to have purpose-built stadiums or purpose-built arenas, mm-hmm. because that may come, but at this present moment, it's best to have that flexibility to enjoy the sport and play the sport wherever it's most practical. But once you get to that top level, yes, it needs to be consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like, I don't know how like familiar you are with like how involved you are with dodgeball right now, because like, if you may or may not know, there's like the great like ball debate about like, which is the best ball type, which is the best like play style, which is the best like this, this and that. And like, it's a very, complex argument because like a lot of people have their different viewpoints on it, and because of that, like a lot of people think that there should be one ball type. And I guess my question for you is, though, like you said, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Would it be beneficial that there are varieties, so that way, like, even if like let's say you solidified like the play style, like the rules for like that play style is the same, everything's consistent with that ball type, if you have the different ball type for variations, would that be helpful for dodgeball? Or would having only one ball type, like when I'm talking like future, like a couple years down the road, would that be better for the sport? Or
one ball type is, I don't think, is that essential. Yes, one ball type at a certain competition level, yes. But if you just even take football, you know, if you said that you all had to play with an Adidas specific ball, all the kids on the beaches, the kids in Africa and everything else that are kicking around, you know, lumps of cloth or whatever it might be, you're sort of negating the sort of simplicity of, you know, the simplicity of the basics of the enjoyment of the sport. You know, at that level, you don't have your referees, you don't have necessary linesmen and other things. It's the kick around. So what you're kicking around, you know, you don't need to have, is it a rubber ball? Is it a foam ball? Is it a cloth ball? It, to that degree, I don't think it's that important. I think it's important that they're playing. I think where it becomes important is to unite the sport that becomes a consistency as you take it up the pyramid to what is going to be the international competition, the international championships. Mm-hmm. And I sense, because, as you say, everybody's got a different opinion. Well, that's life, isn't it? But I think the consistency is, if we could come up with a strategy that people can all see is the logical strategy to go forward and unite behind that strategy, maybe with a brand that we can get that will come with us, going back to the Coca-Cola fee, for example. Maybe if there's a brand that will go with us, then I think people will stop worrying about their own individual sort of personal aspects to what the ball might be, and more think about the the future and forward momentum. Because let's be quite candid, the goal must be ultimately to be an Olympic sport.
Oh, yeah. And
why should you not be an Olympic sport? There is no, but the only reason you'll only become an Olympic sport if you unite behind, you know, a single strategy, a single approach, and don't do anything that stops it being a very simple thing for people to play, because that destroying one of your greatest advantages is that, you know, it can be foam, cloth, rubber, whatever it needs to be for people to be out there playing and enjoying it. But once they get to a certain level, if it's at an Olympic level, they know the game that they will be playing will be to that very clear specification. It's like rugby. You know, I spent a lot of time with rugby. I helped create the first Rugby World Cup in Australia and New Zealand back in 1987 and things. But the 15 game was never going to be the Olympic sport. But although rugby was going to become an Olympic sport, it had to be sevens. And sevens is a very fast, very active. And you know, you've got 100 countries plus more now all play rugby at a very, very high standard. It may be that you need to do something similar, that there's the particular version of particular rules, it's the ones that get pushed to be the ultimate accolade, but don't stop everybody from playing in any way, shape, form, because that's the excitement and motivation.
Right. And actually that brings up a good point, because, and Miles, I forget, somebody asked this on Facebook, but dodgeball has this issue that's going on here, at least here in the States. I don't know about over there, but where dodgeball is getting more and more regulated in like elementary schools, where they're not allowed to play dodgeball because it's too violent, and that they're actually banning some of the dodgeball play from schools. How do we get young kids to keep playing if they're not allowed to play in school?
Well, clearly that is an educational issue. It's not something that I've been aware of or, you know, feel that I'm aware of. It needs the right voices to fight it. I don't know why I'm thinking of this, but we're having a big debate here about vaccines. You know, I've been vaccinated recently of the AstraZeneca vaccine, and yet my colleagues in Europe are all saying the vaccine is dangerous. Where it's not, because 17 million people have all been vaccinated and they're fine. So you know, people saying that playing dodgeball is dangerous or is difficult or it shouldn't be at schools. We have to counter that argument with some very authoritative people, is to get to some academics that can just dismiss that very quickly and put in all the advantages of playing, keeping fit. You know, because I've been looking at things to the Daily Mail and looking at obesity and mental health issues and things, and young people need to be motivated to do more sport. Mm-hmm. And, you know, dodgeball, it is so exciting, and it's the most simplest thing of, you know, wanting to get at your mates mm-hmm. and prove that you're faster, quicker, more enjoyable. There's got to be ways that we can counter what sounds to me like a very silly argument. And maybe, you know, get one or two key people within universities to support it. I work a lot with the sports management groups within universities, both in Europe and around the world. You know, get three or four universities, that not just US, but, you know, mixed universities, to put papers up about the sport. And let's negate that very, very quickly, because we should be encouraging all schools to embrace it, certainly not thinking that schools are going to ban it.
Yeah, and it kind of seems like the same argument, you know, you were having for ball types, that you don't want to limit them. It seems like if we are trying to fight things like childhood obesity and getting people to socialize more, that why would you cut a sport out? Something that's going to get them engaged and moving around and staying active while at school.
Exactly. And therefore, my view would be there's a good opportunity to sort of get that across within the environment of what we're all facing. You know, young people need to be, and if they've all been locked away, what a great way to get back into it. Start chucking some balls around. I mean, right. You know, to get some motivation and some excitement. And but no, I could certainly see countering that argument with the right support, but certainly approaching the sports management, the teachers of the teachers, to get them to assist in that whole process.
Like, I think the whole like banning the schools argument, like, I think that's probably just a state thing, but I think part of that has to do with, like, most of us, if we can remember, like, if you had a traumatizing experience with dodgeball, it probably came from like the rubber balls we use. And because it usually, especially when you're playing at a young age, it usually allows people that kind of develop faster to kind of, like, quote unquote, bully the people that aren't as quite as developed. So, like, a lot of people that probably use that argument, like, oh, dodgeball's a dangerous sport, or this and that, is probably because they had that traumatizing experience. And it's just taking that experience and developing into something good. Like, that is probably what's going to happen, need to happen first.
It could be, you see, again, within football, there are a lot of mm-hmm. concerns about head injuries, the football, and what damage it might have done to previous sort of professional players, is that, you know, the balls in football have changed as technology has developed, and therefore the weight of the ball, the quality of the ball. And it may be that if rubber balls that, you know, lasted forever are too hard, are too are making it a little violent, I don't know. And I'm just guessing this because I've got no reason to say any of this. And therefore, foam and cloth would be a better way of saying that may be a reason for the sport pushing in a given direction. But again, I would do that based upon some sound research, mm-hmm. some to show that the sport is taking the responsibility to look, to analyze, because it's mm-hmm. concerned about health and other issues, that certainly to perhaps get some universities to be supportive in doing some, you know, fundamental research, because if there is a need for a change in the recommendation and there's a very logical reason to have it, then that should be done. But that may not be the case. As you said, it may be just an attitude thing that, you know, they're a bit worried that people are having fun throwing balls at each other. But again, it's certainly worth looking at in a very sort of positive way, rather than just sort of ignoring it.
Yeah, I agree. And thank you, Chris D'Angelo, for asking that question. I went back and looked. So thank you, Chris. So, Mr. Nelly, when you were pairing up FIFA and Coca-Cola, what was the thinking behind that partnership? Was it something that you saw a need with Coca-Cola and an opportunity? did Coca-Cola have some kind of, program that they were doing where they wanted to start helping organizations grow? How did that connection come to be?
Well, when I started, and even to now, I always believed that if sport is going to be used for means of communication, there's got to be very, very clear objectives, a very clear understanding to how that bridge is being created, why it's being created. I was in the fortunate position of knowing about the Coca-Cola company, and the Coca-Cola company wanted to shift its image in Asia, in Africa, and in other countries, because it had actually really started its marketing in these countries through the US military forces. And what they didn't want to be is looked upon as something that was related to the US military, as opposed to wanting to be looked upon as a product within that country, to be national in its imagery, to be national in its presentation. So they'd never invested in a global project because their budgets always used to be domestic. I had a problem of looking for an international budget that didn't exist. So we had to obviously change. But clearly, I knew enough about the company's desire to become national in its outlook and in its way. So it needed to have an opportunity to be in touch with governments, to be in touch with people, something to give to its bottlers and distributors. And, you know, football, soccer, then was trying also to promote itself into these other nations, needed help to how to bring in coaches, teachers, administrators, needed skills programs, needed materials that could help sort of evolve and develop it. So it became a very natural thing to put a company that wanted to communicate its locally national appeal with a sport that clearly was a very good way of doing it and achieving it. So there was a very natural reason for the two entities to come together. I think that it's the same with dodgeball. You know, where are the brand alliances that fit? Mm-hmm. You don't have an industry supporting balls or shoes or drinks as yet. So, and I'm sure, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time, but I'm sure there are some brands that are trying to do things that the two of you could do together and achieve things together. Don't ask me yet exactly what that is. That's why I'm a strategic, you know, involvement. I'm thinking, I'm learning. Mm-hmm. But there will be and should be ways of uniting the community to help. And I think this whole area of health, the whole area of mental obesity, the whole area of concerns, the whole problem that pandemic has created of kids not even being at school, let alone integrating with each other. I'm sure there are ways that the whole ethos of what the sport stands for can be married with corporates or a corporate that have similar objectives, needs, and requirements. And that's where we need to try and put that strategy thinking together to how those things can come together and one can help the other.
Yeah, and I know from my limited experience with it, just with this podcast here and our company, trying to reach out to some bigger companies that we might have a similar goal or interest in, how we can help each other grow has been very difficult for us in Dodgeball as of right now. And I can't imagine on the national, international level where you're talking bigger companies, you know, I'm talking to companies that don't have much of a following yet and trying to relate to them. And a lot of times the conversation just will fizzle out and they'll, oh yeah, we'll get back to you, see what happens. And trying to mitigate that has been one of our biggest hurdles.
Mm-hmm. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it.
Exactly.
And the other problem is that anybody that sits with a title marketing director or whatever receives thousands and thousands of people pursuing them, mm-hmm. from everything from the local church fate to the book to the, it is that, you know, everybody is seeking support, seeking money, seeking, so, you know, unfortunately, therefore, anybody in a position of a marketing responsibility budget is absolutely inundated. So it's not easy. It needs a lot of thinking. It needs a lot of preparation. It takes time, as we talked about. These mm-hmm. things don't happen overnight. It takes unity in terms of, you know, there's a unified way that the sport is going to be moving forward. If things happen, like there is potential Olympic status and other things, of course, then everything gets rated up higher and people's attention starts becoming a lot more sort of serious. But, you know, it's something that needs to be really carefully thought through, carefully structured, and then the whole thing needs to be pieced together in a way that it makes sense both for the sport and for the potential partner.
So cutting through all of that, all of those, you know, like you said, the local church and other companies that are trying to get a piece of the pie, how does dodgeball cut through that as it stands now? Or is it something that we have to build up the sport more before we start actually going after some of those bigger corporations?
A bit of both. I think to start looking at where the fit is, in other words, getting a better understanding of where there is some, and that really, you know, maybe to do some research amongst all of your participants, members, supporters, to where you start getting a feel of where there is some relationships that could make sense. Mm-hmm. It's got to be constantly building the awareness, building understanding, moving forward to greater recognition. These things have to continue together. And a breakthrough clearly will happen probably when you're not thinking there's going to be one. because, you know, you can never plot it to say by X time, by 2022, it's all going to sort of happen. You don't know. But the two things have got to run parallel, and people are going to be thinking outside of the sport to how the sport is perceived. It's, you can get very much involved in just inside your sport and everybody talking about the sport itself and not looking from the outside. Mm-hmm. The reason I agreed to do what I am doing is I'm not too much involved with inside the sport, so I can look at it more dispassionately. I can look at it from the outside and see the, how the outside is looking in, and then start perhaps joining discussions to how those two things can come together.
Yeah. And actually, I said that, Miles, I think that was two episodes ago, where we're all just too mm-hmm. close to the sport and our hearts are too in it to be able to kind of step back and look at it objectively. And that's what I think most of the excitement comes with someone of your stature and your resume to want to come help dodgeball, because you will look at it as it is, and not saying that your heart's not in it, but you have the ability to make those tough decisions without your heart being involved, and that you just want to see the growth of the sport and not, well, this is how I want to play and this is how everybody should play.
Yeah, it gets very emotional at that level. You know, I've been involved in lots and lots and lots of sports, as you could probably gather. And sometimes you've got to separate yourself from all that passion and emotion about, you know, as we discuss balls, you know, it's just too much involvement on the inside. You've got to be quite hard on the outside to really make some decisions. It's like with poker, coming back to poker again. I didn't want to get involved with it because, as far as I was concerned, I was like everybody else. It was gaming and gambling. It was only when I was at Harvard, I was at an event as a speaker, that I met the head of the law school, Professor Charlie Nesson, who was running a thing called the Global Poker Thinking Society. And I spent some time with Charlie, who's an incredible character. And he actually very, very quickly convinced me, Patrick, you know, what are you doing? It is academic, you know, courtroom procedures. If you want to be taught law here, you have to play poker. And the whole mathematics and all the benefits of a very mind sport. And as an ex-chess player, I thought, yeah, he's right. And so then I had to go through, because I started getting involved with passionate poker players mm-hmm. that are like your own sport, you know, only see it in one way because they're desperately involved and play poker the way they play poker. And I said, we can't make poker with the random luck a sport. Forget it, guys. We've got to do something different. So I convinced them to create what started as duplicate poker and then became match poker, which is therefore playing the same cards in the same sequence. And I took the London Eye and I put poker tables in the London Eye, and everybody said I was completely mad. But I said to them, you're not going to get a classic sport recognition for poker in a conventional form of Texas Hold'em because there's too much luck. We have to have a form of poker that becomes the sport that is all skill, is all skill-based. Hence, match poker was created. Hence, match poker is what's recognized as a sport because it's taken the whole luck away. If I'd been one of these very, very involved poker players, that would never have happened because they'd still be arguing, they'd still be debating, you know, you're doing things with our sport that you shouldn't be doing. And I'm not saying, again, that that's what's going on in dodgeball. I know there are some political, you know, nuances that we're going to have to adapt and get people all to come together. But if you're too involved, you're not going to look at it in a fresh way to come up with things that are really going to make the sport beneficial and take the sport to where you want to take it. So yeah, it's important to have a fresh and a dispassionate view so that you can make the right decisions.
Yeah, but so you definitely hit the nail on the head with that comment there, and it's definitely something like I think a lot of dodgeballers will have to take into account. Like, we are very close to this, and it's going to be very hard to like take that step back and take an objective look into it. That's why you're very helpful with that. So with that in mind, like, how do you recommend, like dodgeball players, how do we take that step back, and what can we do to help the sport with that objective view?
Well, I think, as I touched upon a little bit earlier, is perhaps get a little bit of help in that, going back to sports management, you know, sports management has become an integral part of most universities around the world. You've got a lot of young talent being taught that are coming into the industry, to whether it's to, you know, work within football or to work within other sports or to work in marketing, and also to convince the loyalists that have all got their own entrenched views to what dodgeball should or shouldn't be doing, is to come up with a plan that is independently structured so that the integrity of the plan can hopefully be accepted by everybody within the sport. In other words, instead of having the sport arguing amongst itself, the sport combine in a strategic plan, in a strategic review, and then it's got the authority. That, I suppose, is where I've said, yeah, I'll come in, I'll see if I can help, because I understand that these things aren't easy. You know, if badminton had to make different changes to get itself to become an Olympic sport, then those decisions have to be taken. But it's easier to be taken if there's a consensus, and that consensus has come about because other more authoritative people within that sector have been able to contribute. And certainly, you know, I would, not that I've yet put any really strong views forward, but to have a strategic plan being prepared by others in addition to dodgeball, so that there is some independent view and support to how this thing, you know, could be very beneficially taken forward, including things like the school, to stop schools being silly about, you know, not embracing the sport because they feel it's dangerous or something. So, yeah, it's coming up with plans that people can buy in because it has that authenticity from people that know that this is a good thing for the sport to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I know a couple of years back, like, one of our, I guess, main, like, it's kind of hard to describe from someone that's not from the States, but I guess, like, one for our main tournaments, like, the organization that ran most of our, like, elite-level tournaments, he ran, like, I guess a campaign to be where he was, like, do your part. Like, do your part for the sport. Like, grow the sport. Share the sport. Basically, like, he was trying to get players to, instead of just focusing on the court, focusing on what you could do as a player, what you could do outside of the sport to help promote the sport. And I know he had a very, I don't want to say it's a campaign, but he was definitely very advocating about the fact that players need to do more versus just focusing on what's on the court. And you need to do what you can to promote it, do what you can to bring people in, do what you can to basically, in short, advertise the sport and help grow it from what you can do. And that looks very different from everyone's personal thing. Is good, like, everyone has different skill sets, different passions, and what they can and can't do. Like, for example, like, what me and Brett can do, what we're doing is we're taking it from the fitness and sports, or the training aspect of it. Some other people might have marketing experience like yourself. Some other people might have psychology experience. Like, there's a lot of different skill sets that everyone has. It's just a matter of utilizing those skills.
Yeah, and bringing it all together and coming up with a plan that everybody can see the logic of it and moving it forward. Because there will be people out there that would embrace the right plan. There's no question, because you know they're not going to be putting a plan together. But when they see how the sense of those two things come together, the Coca-Cola fee, for example, then the thing can be executed and move forward, because you need those financial resources. You don't have the financial resources to do it yourselves without somebody coming in to support you. So all of that needs to be thought through. But certainly, you know, putting a team, not a massive, but a small team together with the right thinkers in it to come up with, because just as you talked about trying to get sponsors to support your own podcast, you know how hard that is. You know how much time it's going to spend, and you're spinning wheels most of the time. Actually, to achieve it is very difficult. It's the same with the sport. We could be pushing out documentation saying how wonderful it is all the time, but it doesn't have any impact at all because it hasn't actually sort of given us the ability to what makes that engagement. So we have to come up with that rational reason for engagement before we start trying to tell everybody about how wonderful we are.
That's why we kind of started. What we have here is this gave us more of a platform to be able to connect to not only dodgeballers, but something for dodgeballers to share, giving more opportunity to get more eyes on the sport.
How does dodgeball, the sport, do that?
I think, again, it comes to sort of skill and talent. So unless there is somebody within dodgeball that has a very, very good communication, understanding, a skill, maybe somebody from a big agency that happens to be a very passionate sort of player would actually help put a plan together. Mm-hmm. My instinct says it's probably better to get a group through a mixed university group, maybe someone in Asia, someone in Europe, somewhere in the Americas, to collaborate on a strategic plan. Because it's as I said, it's from the outside looking in, not the inside looking out, because there's got to be a communication platform which needs specialist thinking. And certainly, you know, I can help start that process, but I think it needs, if there is the genuine desire, which clearly there is, to make this a global and Olympic sport, there needs to be a strategic plan that isn't about arguing amongst yourselves within the sport. So first of all, we've got to stop all the argumentation that may be going on within the sport to come to a single proposal, single plan that moves it out, that, you know, governments are happy that they see it, that schools, that universities, the academics, the medical people, that, you know, it's a consistent, well thought through, structured plan to get across all of the attributes, the qualities to why this sport is important, to why this sport should be given all the support that it needs to be in schools and everywhere else. But you know, that is a strategic plan that needs to be prepared, and not only by dodgeball supporters. It needs to be by people that are specialists in communication.
Mm-hmm. And I think that actually touches on a question someone else asked. So Steve Damon, he runs another podcast. It's called the Dodgeball Podcast. So it's very similar to ours, but his is focused more on interviews and kind of recaps that happen in dodgeball. And what his question was is, how do we get that fan base? Like, you just touched on, like, how we can get people to not only support the platform, but to support the sport, but then may not be directly involved with the sport. Like, how do we get that fan base? How do we get them to, like, a lot of people love watching dodgeball, but they don't really, like, follow dodgeball. Like, you know how they're casual, like, they may walk in the gym to see the dodgeball game happening. They may stay around and watch, but how do we get them from that point where they just kind of walk in to actively, like, following the sport? Like, how do we do that?
Again, you know, that requires some campaign to some reason to why they should. You know, going back when we first started thinking of creating the global marketing program for the Olympics, we actually created a character called Olympo. And we were actually going to have, rather than the different mascots for the different Olympic events, that we actually were going to have a consistent character that was going to be promoting Olympic ideal, Olympism, Olympic sports on a continuous basis. And it almost came through, but eventually it was decided to keep it that each individual Olympic event would have still its own mascots. But Olympo was being created at a time when Olympics were not being very well supported to try and get that whole ethos of it isn't just about the event, it's about the whole ideals, the whole way of life, the way of behavior. So clearly there are ways of perhaps introducing, whether it's a character, whether it's a slogan, whether it's a momentum about, you know, obesity issues or whatever it might be, is there's got to be a call for action. There's got to be something that people can become involved with other than just being a player, that a parent, a fan can become more, you know, involved because there is a way that they can become involved. At the moment, what is the outside of going and watching a game, is there not that many clubs in terms of branding of clubs to support? There's not much sort of international understanding. So yeah, this is all part of that strategic plan.
Okay. Well, so that definitely makes some sense. And I think that's a good way to, I think that's a good way to transition to our crowdsource question now. So let me try to go in order of importance, and then it's kind of like the more fun, unnecessary questions, depending on how much time we got left. All right.
Okay.
So our next question is from Shelby Grimes. So some of these questions we already touched on. For example, like, she wants to know how can sport get to the next level. You definitely touched on that multiple times. So the next question she has is, what are the top three things that you want to achieve in the sport? So I'm assuming you have goals you wanted to achieve. Like, what are some plans that you have?
I think the three things is to get a consistent understanding of where the sport wants to position itself. What is its targets? Is it targeting just young people? Is it targeting competitive teams in terms of making, like within other sports, that there is that strong, fierce support of individual team and team competition? Also to analyze for itself what is its branding aspects? What, as I said earlier, if you're going to relate to a corporate company, what are the brand values of the sport? So a bit of a clarity of, you know, what are the brand values? What are the primary audience? What are the things that, as a sport, that we see as being? So there needs to be a little of looking at oneself and then setting aside the aspects that there is complete agreement. Those are the three things that we are going to be concentrating on creating what is the image of our sport.
Awesome. Let's say definitely excited about that. So our next question is, I'm not sure if we touched on this one. So what is the biggest thing that you, at least in your opinion, is holding the sport back from being more widespread, being more consumed by the fan base? Like, what do you think is holding our sport back from progressing forward?
A lack of understanding of the attributes of the sport. Perhaps a slight negative perception because of the movie and things that it's just frivolous and that it's something that's sort of not to be taken quite so seriously. So I think what is lacking is a certain amount of integrity of people understanding the integrity and the, you know, tremendous benefits of the sport. So there's a lack of understanding, which you just can't just say it. It's got to be shown. It's got to be supported. But I tend to feel that there is, people just to think, oh, dodgeball is some silly game, as opposed to being a very serious sport that has tremendous attributes in helping all sorts of areas in physicality, health, mental, and everything else that clearly, you know, the support the sport has to offer.
Okay. Great. So our next one, I'm not sure who this is, but it's from Meet Dodgeball Productions. So I'm hoping it's like a media company. So his next question is, what excites you about working with the WDBF?
The challenge. The fact that, as I've said, it's nice to put back. Having spent a lot of time with a lot of sports and been very helpful with a lot of sports, to me, it's nice to have the challenge. The fact that I feel it's in a educational, social area, health area, I think currently, you know, it is very, very important that people are looking for new things. You know, there's too much of the old traditions, and a lot of sports are just getting lost in their old traditions, where I think there's a very young and energetic opportunity within dodgeball. I think basketball has led the way in terms of being very exciting, become very global, has become a sport that I think that is a similar way that dodgeball could go and could follow. The fact that it is team and everybody can participate, everybody can enjoy, I sense, you know, excitement and enthusiasm, and it's fun. And let's be quite candid, in life today, you know, we need some fun. We need some bonding. We need some human contact. We need, and therefore, yeah, I'm just, from that very early conversation back in Australia, whoever the charming young lady was that spent a long time sitting with me and one of my colleagues chatting about dodgeball, yeah, I became fascinated that here is a communication challenge that if I can help, then let's see if I can help.
Okay. That's it. I think I'm just guessing here. I'm thinking you're probably talking to Rosie Everett, if that name sounds familiar to you. I'm assuming she's probably running the thing, because I believe she's the president of the Australian Federation, if I'm knowing that correctly.
Could be, and I must apologize to her for not remembering her name. But I didn't think at that stage that I was going to continue on with my enthusiasm, but it was, yeah, it was interesting, and it's good. It's good to see that there's some new sports and new things, and yeah, it's good for changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we think. Our biggest asset lies that though we are small and growing, that is what is also our biggest strength, that we're small still, that dodgeball's, we're getting this kind of traction and we're still very small. So hopefully in the next couple of years here, hopefully I'm still playing at this time, but hopefully that growth can be expedited.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's absolutely no reason why not, because as I've said, where there are a lot of sports that probably will struggle, you know, we're coming hopefully out of a pandemic, but who knows, you know, future, there may be more pandemics and things, but sports and the whole, you know, mental, as I said, I think young people, you know, need to be more embracing and socializing and having relationships and having human contact. And sports that, you know, are in that sort of area, which you are, I think are becoming more and more important. And it's going to be, and the simplicity, let's be quite candid, the simplicity of putting a group together to enjoy a game is tremendous. And, you know, simpler things are not having to have masses of kit and masses of equipment, you know, a couple of knee pads perhaps, and, you know, a ball, you know, again, let's not worry about whether it's cloth, foam or rubber, but just the sheer ability to get that excitement and interest, and then building up the pyramid, yes, to more competition and teams, and then national championships and, you know, global events, you know, will all come. But there are so many, you know, good, solid reasons to why your sport should be well embraced at all levels.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring that up. I've never really thought about the barrier to entry of dodgeball is very low, where almost like in soccer, it costs a couple of bucks to get a ball, or, you know, you wrap something up in duct tape and throw it at each other. All you need is a little bit of space and a few people, mm-hmm. and you're basically playing dodgeball. And I think that is something that will be very helpful to us that I've never thought about until you put it in those kind of terms, which I think that would be another one of those stepping stones for schools to be able to, you don't need a big football field. You don't need all these things. All you need is a ball.
Yeah. And it's also that whole social opportunity of selecting a few mates to be a mm-hmm. team. You know, and that interaction as individuals, and the confidence of, you know, being with the team, and the excitement of being with the team, you know, it's all that, the simplicity of it, and let's be quite candid, throwing something or throwing a ball you know, is the earliest and simplest form of sport, the simplest form of, there is nothing, you know, more natural than picking up and throwing, and it's nice to see if you can hit somebody with it. It's it's such a simple, natural, and therefore something that I think should be very, very seriously embraced. And it's fun, you know. It's and you know, if we take fun out of life, you know, what the hell are we going to do?
Yeah, exactly. Miles, do we have anything else from social?
We have a lot more, but I'm trying to like pick the better one. So I'm gonna pick probably one or two more. So the same, another one from Steve Damon. His question is, how do we as a community take advantage of like video content? So like there's a lot of like clips of dodgeball, like that we take pictures, we take videos, we edit them, we show like the kind of the major, like kind of like the highlights. How do we take advantage of the ones that gain a lot of traction? So like going viral, for example, like we had one video that got millions of likes, or, and it showed on ESPN. It was a great video. The problem is a lot of dodgeballers think that like if it goes viral, we get a lot of attention. How do we take that momentum and push forward with videos like that?
It's a real challenge, you know, in terms of use of social media and distribution. Clearly, there are things like the Olympic Channel, which is an OTT platform that pushes sport and obviously gets sort of a kudos because it's linked with the Olympics. The simple answer is there are people that make a living out of specializing in making distribution, getting onto these platforms. You need, you know, it doesn't happen by accident, really. It happens by design. Is that the Federation needs somebody permanently taking that responsibility to maximize and exploit in any way possible. Again, it comes back to that branding of coming up with an idea of a marriage made in heaven, that a brand that can see their brand and the sports brand merging. Because, you know, not that necessarily people want to promote soft drinks, but, you know, a drink company that's got media dollar spend that may use it in a commercial or use it in something that gets real traction. It comes back to, you know, using other people's resources, other people's money, because one of those clips that becomes supported by a major brand obviously is going to be of enormous support, enormous help. And that's all takes time to consider, to strategize, to contact. But it needs somebody that's, you know, constantly as a professional working on that, because, you know, one big hit could make all the difference in the world.
All right,
Miles, let's hit him with one last social one. And then if he has any questions for us, Mr. Nelly, we're going to open up the floor to you if to ask anything about dodgeball.
Okay, so there is one. Andrew Ketchum. So he's a Team USA player. He was on the last two or three Worlds teams, and they got silver and gold. So his question is, do you know anything about the WDA, the World Dodgeball Association?
I do.
Okay. So his question is, do you have any plans on uniting them? Because I know on another podcast with Steve Damon's podcast, he had the WDBF president on there. There was an interview there, and I know he touched on possible unification between the two groups. Do you have any involvement with that or any plans on doing that?
The answer is unification is essential. Anything I can do to help, obviously I will help, but there's no question that the sport needs to come together and have a united front and a united approach, because if it doesn't, it just sort of handicaps it so much better. So, you know, am I in a position to make any judgment about who's right, who's wrong? No. Do I want to? No. Do I want to make any judgments about rubber balls, cloth balls, foam balls? No, nor do I need to. It's what is needed is unity and really thinking through, as we've been discussing through this podcast, what is the sport? What are the attributes of the sport? What are the branding of the sport? How can the sport create its own characters or other things that give it greater acceptance and more permanent involvement? All these things that we've been discussing. needs to be come together as a plan and then executed as a plan through the sport, because it's not going to happen by accident. It's going to happen by design. Mm-hmm. You've got, because it comes back to the question of why I'm involved, in that, you know, I see all of the energy, I see all of the benefits, I see all of the enthusiasm, I see the simplicity, I see all these things that many other sports just don't have. So if you can galvanize that unity, make all these elements work in a coordinated plan, I think the sport has an enormous opportunity and certainly has the ability to be an Olympic sport in the very near future. Why not? It's just that single-mindedness that is necessary, and taking advice from people that can assist. And again, the medical profession and, you know, some of the, and then the academic professions, get other people to help sort of get that message, endorse that message, and get that message across. Because, as I said, the attributes of the sport are such that I can't see anybody wanting to stop you move in the direction that you want to move.
Just hearing someone of your stature talk about dodgeball like that gets me very excited.
Oh, yeah, same.
And as someone that's played for, over a decade now, like, hearing dodgeball having the potential to go to that level gets me very excited about the near future of dodgeball.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I'm on this call.
But we've been able to pick your brain for over an hour here, and we really appreciate having you on. I wanted to open up the floor to you. If you have any questions that you would like to ask, maybe get a little bit of insight on, as me and Miles have probably a quarter century of mm-hmm. dodgeball experience. And as two people that are actively trying to grow the dodgeball community, if there's anything that you would like to ask of us.
Well, I think, no, it's been very helpful, because obviously I'm getting a better insight as I talk more, as I study more. But equally, as I said to you, I don't want to get too involved mm-hmm. to become, if you like, entrenched in, oh, I think this person's got a better view than that person, mm-hmm. or this rule is better because that rule, because that means I'm going to get too, in some ways, too involved. Mm-hmm. I'd like to stay a little distanced and do the challenging and do the questioning about, you know, where we can take it. What can we do mm-hmm. with it? How do we resolve it? Unity absolutely is important. Dwayne, I really like and admire, and I think that he's got, you know, good logical thinking to how to keep the sport and bring the sport together in a unified way. What I think I can do is start putting some of the strategic thinking that we've been kicking around for the last hour in to help, you know, come up with the plan. It then needs guys like you to help communicate that plan and to get a buy-in of that plan and, you know, start thinking of all the questions that I've asked you about. What are the attributes? What are the brand personalities? What are, because all of that is needed to help sort of put that whole strategic thoughts together. So my takeaway on this is that, yeah, perhaps your listeners and yourselves can respond to some of the things that we've been talking about today and help take that process forward.
Yeah, but that, I think that's why I was kind of surprised you agreed to this podcast, because like you said, you kind of want to keep yourself like as objective as possible. So keeping that distance where you don't get too involved, I figured that was kind of like be your kind of your first goal. So like, I was very surprised when Brett said like, yeah, he agreed to doing this podcast. I was like, oh boy, he's not this like figurehead that's like got to stay as far away from like the involvement as possible, so that way you could be objective as possible. Like, I thought it'd be a little bit more of a struggle getting you on here, but I'm glad we were wrong in that aspect.
No, I'm delighted to be on. And what I don't want to do, and you're quite right, I don't want to get involved in the internal politics, because mm-hmm. that's a complete no, that's a complete loser. I'm sure I'm sure you'll sort all that out yourselves. Doesn't need me, you know, that is something that it will take care of itself. I've got absolutely no doubt that will just eventually take care of itself, because mm-hmm. the momentum of the sport is too great. At the end of the day, it's about moving the sport forward. So I don't need to get into that, but let's explore ways to how we can take the sport forward. And that does need, you know, ideas, thoughts, it does need challenges. It does, you know, one's got to sort of get get a feeling of all those better qualities of the sport. Forget the politics, you know. Politics, unfortunately, exist with this. Sports politics is just, you know, a nature of the beast. And it'll get worse as the sport becomes more established and becomes better. You know, look at FIFA. When I started with FIFA, it was almost a bankrupt organization. You know, it had five members of staff in a rented office in Zurich. And then, of course, as it became the big, rich, wealthy sport, you know, we see the sort of corruption that exists in society, which is sad. So, you know, but the politics of it, I'm sure, will sort. And then the big danger is when this sport is as big and massive as it should be, there'll be even more complications and more challenges. But I'm sure the sport, you know, because of the grounding of it, I think will take care of itself, because it's coming out of a family. It's coming out of young people and adults. It, to me, it gives me a better feeling that there's a more balanced structure within the sport than in some other sports. It's not just entrenched in masculinity, for instance. It's, you know, it is a lovely broad spread. So my instinct says the sport itself has got, you know, great opportunities to police itself, to promote itself, to grow. And I think it has a very good social aspect that could be very beneficial in this crazy world that we're currently living in.
Yeah, I agree. And Mr. Nally, we really appreciate you coming on. I would love to circle around in a year and see what kind of improvements we've made, if we're able to play this year or not, and see what you have kicking around and what has all been implemented in your first year here. And if you ever want to return to the podcast to make any kind of announcements or anything you want to chat about, we are always open and we will get you on.
I'll fix the date now then. You do realize today is St. Patrick's Day, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Okay, well, there we go. St. Patrick's Day. What better day to be on than to be talking to you? Yeah. So next St. Patrick's Day, I'll see you.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, guys.
Thank you very much. My pleasure. Again, guys, anybody that's out there that isn't following us on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, go give us a follow. Let us know what you think of this episode. And Miles, if you're good, I'm good.
I'm good, man.
All right. Thank you again, Mr. Nally.
My pleasure. You take care.